thinkers, namely concepts of consciousness and the concept of organization. In the first instance, the concept of political consciousness is at once descriptive of the social development of a people or a class as they emerge at historic turning points in their struggle for self-determination. In the second case, the concept of organization takes its point of departure from what the masses have created as a practical consequence of realizing or externalizing the inner pulse that that revolutionary turn in their consciousness takes. Thus, no matter what the theoretical or historical, the historical phenomena, thought gives an organizational form to social experience in a manner that determines the experience and the method by which consciousness must recognize the reality it is opposed to as also contained in itself. The theoretical articulation of this single dialectic of consciousness and organization demonstrates its objectivity when it motivates the theoretical and practical labors of others, such as ourselves here today. History has continuously demonstrated this in the case of Frantz Fanon and Malcolm X. From the beginning of his epical work, The Wretched of the Earth, Frantz Fanon saw that where the mind of the oppressed determined their drive toward freedom, not merely their, quote, muscles' own immediacy, unquote, there was not merely by their muscles' own immediacy, unquote, there was also brought, quote, a natural rhythm into experience, into existence, introduced by new men and with it a new language and a new humanity, unquote. Here, too, is contained an organizational principle in this language and consciousness of revolt, which gives the history of a people its particular contour and meaning. For as Hegel observes, quote, the mind of a people in its richness is an organization directed to one end, freedom, unquote. Quote, the very forms of organization of the struggle, Fanon wrote, will suggest then a different vocabulary. Therefore, it is through the new language of revolt that we first discover the mind of a people whose richness is its organizational capacity and who seeks, as Fanon said, without any period of transition, to be free, to enter onto the stage of history by turning all of its notions concerning the past upside down. That is why the first impression that we have of Malcolm is the uncompromising sharpness of his oratory. As Turner and Allen wrote in the work that was cited here earlier, Frantz Fanon Sewedo and American Black Thought, quote, he, Malcolm, spoke in the language and thoughts of the disinherited urban black people that could not be articulated by any other prominent leader. Malcolm X's rhetoric was the rhetoric of the class differences that exist between the black masses and the black leadership. In his speeches, this was the reality of the movement, and he sought to illustrate these differences by drawing the analogy of the, quote, house Negro and who had the thoughts and feelings of the master. He used the collective noun we when talking about himself and the other one, the, quote, unquote, field Negro who wanted to see the master's house burnt to the ground and the master dead. In projecting this idea, Malcolm's language was colorful and often derisive, but it wasn't fantasy. It made a lot of sense to the urban blacks and exposed the fundamental lack of a philosophy of change which prevented the civil rights movement from advancing beyond integration and voting rights toward a real revolution, unquote. Thus, the language of revolt of this new revolutionary black consciousness singled a rupture in Western thought, not necessarily an Afrocentricity, but a thorough decentering of the ruling ideology. However, it is not only how and under what circumstances the wretched of the earth enter and make history, but also what the dialectic of history reveals of the material conditions which militate against what Fanon calls, quote, the absolute line of action, unquote, or the quote unquote work of the native revolutionary. As the Kenyan revolutionary writer Ngugi wa Thiong'o reminds us, the first aspect of language is what, quote, Marx once called the language of real life, which is basic to the whole notion of language, its origins and development. This refers to the relations that people enter with one another in the labor, the links they necessarily establish among themselves in the act of a people, a community of human beings, producing wealth or means of life like food, clothing, and houses, unquote. Here we come upon a second rupture. As against the rupture between black subjectivity and Western thought, we confront the internal dialectic of material conditions and national consciousness of a people. That is, the dialectic wherein, as Fanon reminds us, economic substructure is also superstructure, unquote. This twofold external and internal dialectic distinguishes the particularity of black self-determination. Consequently, freedom can neither be conferred from outside or from above, nor can it be determined by the economism of material necessity. That is why Fanon urged or argued that, quote, Africa will not be free through the mechanical development of material forces, but it is the hand of the African and his brain that will set in motion and implement the dialectics of the liberation of the continent, unquote. For Fanon, the revolutionary consciousness of the wretched of the earth finds its destiny in the historical, quote-unquote, work of reason, a historical reason in which, quote, violence represents the absolute line of action. For the militant is also a man who works, unquote. Malcolm X was such a man who works, and whose articulation of the reason of America's wretched of the earth expressed the absolute line of action Fanon pointed to. It is not an accident of history that these two revolutionaries were contemporaries, even while they have quite distinct meanings for us today. For as much as Malcolm's thought and sensibilities were shaped by the violence of American black reality, so Fanon's thought developed in response to the effects of colonial violence on the African mind. Where the one was a victim of Western democracy, the other was a clinical analyst trying to comprehend the victimization of Western colonialism. Through their respective vantage points, each revolutionized black thought. Regardless of this dialectic of experience, which permits the intercommunication of ideas between Fanon and Malcolm, their relationship constitutes nothing so reductionist as Wolfenstein's styrenization of Malcolm X and his Victims of Democracy, Malcolm X and the Black Revolution. When Wolfenstein is too little Marxian, such as when he equates Garveyism with the Klan, because presumably they equally share the, quote, irrationality of proletarian false consciousness, unquote, he, that is Wolfenstein, is too uncritically Freudian, as when he wildly theorizes about Malcolm's, quote-unquote, inflamed Oedipal ambitions, unquote, supposedly centering on his patricidal wish for his father's death. This flies in the face of Fanon's expert critique, and Fanon was a psychiatrist, of Freudian psychoanalysis as a paradigm for comprehending black subjectivity. Thus, when Fanon analyzed and what Malcolm experienced and articulated is the dialectic meaning of that black subjectivity which falls in with that reality which was supposed to have been its negation, namely the violence of the American urban ghetto and that of colonial occupation. And the dialectic context of this experience of the oppressed explained and experience articulated, we find that by negating their violent reality, the wretched of the earth discover their historic purpose, their absolute line of action. Malcolm was the embodiment of Fanon's notion that, quote, the native discovers reality and transforms it into the pattern of his customs, into the practice of violence, and into his plan for freedom, unquote. At the same time, however, there exists a superficial attempt to subsume the social divisions that inhere in the national consciousness of the people beneath the abstraction of quote-unquote black unity or behind the political ethos of the African nation state. Malcolm's scathing critique of the black bourgeoisie was as integral to his absolute line of action as was his work against the ideological edifice of the white power structure. It is Malcolm, as social critic of black political leadership, which distinguished him from other black leaders. Most importantly for us today, it was an uncompromising critique that did not spare himself. Indeed, it is this self-reflective and self-critical element in the thought of Malcolm X, which makes his autobiography such a compelling testament today. Because of his continuous preoccupation with critiquing the social divisions within the black community, the problem for Malcolm, as for Fanon, was the expenditure of the masses' activity and struggling to overcome the exploitative reality of white racism, only to relapse into an immobility which permits the black bourgeoisie to once again exert its leadership unchallenged. Despite the black bourgeoisie's self-proclaimed leadership of the movement, nevertheless, up until its point of exhaustion, the masses in motion had determined the actual direction of the movement from below, constantly pushing the leadership to the left. Karl Marx, in writing on the contradictory development of the revolution in Spain in the 1850s, pointed to this phenomenon when he wrote, quote, It is one of the peculiarities of revolutions that just as the people seem about to take a great start and to open a new era, they suffer themselves to be ruled by the delusions of the past and surrender all the power and influence they have so dearly won into the hands of men who represent or are supposed to represent the popular movement of a bygone epoch, unquote. The black bourgeoisie appears at this stage with its demands for privileges. Its field of action never goes beyond the limitations set for it by the ruling class ideology of capitalism and colonialism, so that while the action of the masses exhausts itself in their struggle against the violence of existing society, the class nature of the black bourgeoisie comes to the fore, not as action, but merely as personality. As a mere caricature of militant action, the presence of this personality is derived, Fanon informs us, from, quote, a permanent wish for identification with the bourgeois representatives of the mother country, unquote. In the final analysis, this class leadership of the black bourgeoisie becomes the conduit for the destruction of black self-determination. Nevertheless, the process of black liberation, the violent confrontation with capitalist reality, is an ongoing process insofar as the black masses cannot know who they are until they have made themselves real by revolutionary action. Consciousness is unable to determine the purpose of its action before action has taken place. And because action is also the action of thought, the action of the masses occurs once the act itself is in front of them as their essence, aim, and object. The conclusion we have arrived at then is that revolutionary action is not only the muscle's own immediacy of the masses, as Fanon mentions, but the action of cognition itself. Thus, man not only comes to know the revolutionary dimensions of his nature by this dialectic of action, what Fanon tells us of having watched men and women in Africa, quote, being created by revolutionary beginnings, we find recapitulated in the autobiography of Malcolm X. Whether embodied in the life of the social individual, such as Malcolm, or in the self-determination of the people, the purpose of the liberation struggle becomes an actuality through the process which liberates the human capacities of men, of women and men. Indeed, the very liberation of human capacities itself is the subjective means by which the purpose of the struggle becomes a reality. However, Fanon goes further, and in doing so discloses not only the dialectic that shaped the thought of Malcolm X, the contours of Malcolm's tragic contradiction. It is in the revolutionary renewal of his historical purpose, of reaffirming the task history has assigned him, that, quote, the conditions necessary for the inevitable conflict are brought together, Fanon tells us, unquote. The original revolutionary nature of Malcolm implicated his own immediate circumstances in Elijah Muhammad's Nation of Islam. At this stage, we find Fanon's warning about the, quote, pitfalls of national consciousness, unquote. Prefigured in Malcolm's break with the NOI and the conceptual reorganization he had only begun when he was shot down, is Fanon's notion that, quote, there must be an idea of man, of the future of humanity, unquote. Otherwise, Fanon warns, quote, if nationalism is not made explicit, if it is not enriched and deepened by a very rapid transformation into a consciousness of social and political needs, in other words, into humanism, it leads up a blind alley, unquote. In Malcolm's recognition of this blind alley, we confront both his enduring revolutionary meaning for succeeding generations of revolutionaries, as well as the tragic duality in his legacy. To comprehend this contradiction, which affords us a critical vantage point from which to distinguish what is revolutionary and what is mere personality among today's black leadership, we must determine the relationship of consciousness to organization in the thought of Malcolm X. For it is in that relationship that we discern the direction Malcolm was to take upon making his historic break with Elijah Muhammad's Nation of Islam. The question that arises at this point is, what was the nature of Malcolm's, that is, was it an ideological as well as organizational break, or was it only organizational? And alternatively, if it was both, which is what I would argue, could there still have been a residue of an independent element in his thought which has its own inner necessity? In other words, if a revolutionary does not think of his ideological independence as inseparable from the new revolutionary forces which historically compelled his break, then in thought, He inescapably takes the meaning of his break to be the figments of his own personal disillusionment and fails to recognize the objective source and historical tendency of his break that his break actually represents. And in practice, this contradiction restrains the black masses from critically confronting the reactionary nationalism for which Malcolm broke and which condemned him to death. In reality, the political action involved in Malcolm's death, in a certain sense, never got beyond itself and never extended beyond its own immediate causes, precisely because it occurred in the framework of an organization that Malcolm mistakenly identified with the self-determination of the people. The dialectic of the latter, that is, of the masses, is the dialectic of liberation, while the ideology of the NOI is a motionless movement in which dialectic had long ago changed into the logic of retrogression. To be sure, it was the contradiction between Malcolm's work for the NOI and his developing revolutionary consciousness which precipitated his break. Quote, if I harbored any personal disappointment, Malcolm tells us in the autobiography, it was that privately I was convinced that our Nation of Islam could be an even greater force in the American black man's overall struggle if we engaged in more action. It could be heard increasingly in the Negro communities, quote, those Muslims talk tough, but they never do anything. I felt the very real potentiality that considering the mercurial moods of the black masses, this labeling of the Muslims as talk only could see us powerful as we were, one day suddenly separated from the Negro's front line struggle, unquote. The contradiction Malcolm experienced marked a revolution in his thought, one which was also determined by his discovery that there was no correspondence between the idea and the reality of Elijah Muhammad's Islam. Malcolm's abolition of his previous empty notion of Islam was, however, replaced again by his personal experience of quote-unquote true Islam, rather than by the dialectic of liberation of the black masses in motion, which was at the heart of his break. Thus, the historic break of Malcolm X from Elijah Muhammad's Nation of Islam was itself reified within the confines of his personal religious awakening to true Islam, where his critique of the NOI, and it is trenchant in the autobiography, never extended beyond his personal disillusionment. As a critique, it never got beyond the self-limiting confines of religion. We're left then with a dualistic view of the Nation of Islam, one which Louis Farrakhan, the erstwhile Boston minister who once called for Malcolm's death, is today very willing to exploit. At the same time, we're left with the view of a revolutionary whose most abiding legacy in the final analysis may be his uncompromising, critical, and self-critical attitude to the historic task of working out the dialectics of liberation, thus seriously exploring the contradictory process by which the thought of Malcolm X developed is itself an urgent task that remains to be done. It is precisely because this contradictory process was inseparable from the creativity of the black masses that he tirelessly sought to articulate right up until the very end of his life, when he became interested in Marxism, that new critical studies of the life and thought of Malcolm X cannot do otherwise than lay new ground for revolutionary black thought and the American Revolution to be. Thank you.